a.m. on July 18th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And as always, we've got a great show lined up for you today. Joining us in the studio, we have Ron Hutchison from Smart Funding Solutions, along with Barry Etra of the Etra Advisory Group, and also Kevin McGee from Access to Capital for Entrepreneurs, or ACE. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So glad to have you all here. We are going to talk to these guys. We're going to grill them.
We're going to have a great roundtable discussion about access to capital for entrepreneurs.
Right. My favorite thing, money. We're going to talk about that. But first, before we do all that, we're going to jump over to Elizabeth for today's Atlanta business headlines.
Absolutely. Stockholders at the Coca-Cola Company stamped their approval on a 2-for-1 stock split last week, the 11th in the stock's 92-year history and the first in 16 years. The split is expected July 27th, with new shares distributed on or about August 10th. Dallas Mavericks owner and media entrepreneur Mark Cuban invests in Atlanta social media startup Badgy, which provides a social search engine optimization platform for digital marketers and consumer brands.
I have to interrupt you. I have to. Because if you said that sentence to my mother, she would just look at you like a deer in headlights.
Huh? Like, what exactly does that mean?
Right, and also
that's
Badgy.
What's so amazing about some of these companies. You can get $600,000 worth of financing, and people don't even understand exactly what you do.
Throw a bunch of buzzwords in a sentence, and you're done. Moving on.
No, they're doing much more than that, and we're very proud of all the startup activity here in Atlanta.
Of course.
Building permits over in Athens are way up. The Athens-Clark County Building Inspection Department has issued permits for $110.3 million in new construction during the first 6 months of 2012, which is more than the entire number of permits the department issued in all of 2011. Permits are particularly up on apartments, duplexes, and condominiums, but also for construction of new single-family homes, commercial buildings, and alterations to existing buildings.
What about bars?
Oh.
Because that is the heart of the Athens economy, right?
Exactly. And also maybe once everyone moves over there and gets into their new apartments, they'll have to start on the bars.
I agree.
More
exactly.
bars.
Exactly. Moving definitely makes you thirsty.
For sure.
Now, Dana, this next one just made me laugh. According to a new report, yogurt outpaces the rest of the U.S. food industry in growth. A Nielsen study says U.S. sales of yogurt are up 15% from 2010, and an analyst from Barclays Bank noted that of the current largest production capacity projects in the U.S. food industry, at least 7 are in the yogurt sector. Danone is increasing its capacity of its Ohio plant, and the CEO of Chobani says the U.S. market for yogurt could double in size over the next few years.
What about frozen yogurt?
I was wondering that, too, because those frozen yogurt, there's a lot of frozen yogurt shops, again, popping up.
I have seen a lot of those Froyo
Yeah, it
shops,
was popular,
but
what,
I
10 years ago,
and
then went away?
This was talking about the entire
yogurt.
So there's like the macro class of all yogurt. Right, that includes, right, you know, the fruit at the bottom, the old classic kind,
right.
Greek yogurt,
right.
As well as frozen.
But so it has to be marketing, right? Because yogurt's been around forever, and no one cared, and now all of a sudden it's a huge growth industry?
I think it's really odd to think that we're actually going to double our consumption of yogurt.
I think the five of us
possible?
Should make a pack not to eat any more yogurt.
I consume about 2% of the frozen yogurt.
How much?
2%.
2%
yeah.
is all
Me
you
Me and my
it's
daughters,
you.
Yeah. Frozen yogurt only.
But the frozen I like too, but the regular stuff is the same as it's always been.
Yeah. We're the regular yogurt people. I buy yogurt and chunks of 10 at the supermarket.
So you're part of this.
Right.
Yeah. You're
so
part of this problem. Or
little poll in the studio here. Yeah. Apparently.
Yogurt is popular.
Yogurt is quite popular.
Okay.
Kind of grossed me out, though, these giant vats of yogurt.
I know.
Like,
don't think about it.
Enormous production facility of yogurt.
Don't think about it. You'll put us all off yogurt.
All right. Go yogurt. A new study by the Georgia Credit Union Association shows that more than 1 in 6 Georgians are now putting their hopes of home ownership on hold. The top reasons Georgians cited for postponing a home purchase were pay cuts, wanting to pay off existing debt first, and uncertainty about the national economy. Well, that sounds pretty smart to me. I mean, if you have existing debt that you're trying to pay off, or uncertainty, you're in an uncertain situation, maybe it's not time to buy a house.
But so then the question would be, is the real estate market slowing down again? Is the buying and selling slowing down based on a survey like this? Because I don't think it really is. I think people lie on surveys. Just saying. You know, because they're saying they're not really, but there's still plenty of people that are.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we had a real estate report last week, and there's a lot of activity going on, and inventory is not staying on the market in key Atlanta markets for very long.
Right.
So if you are in the housing market, if you are pre-approved, you do have the cash or the ability to make a purchase.
I mean,
you can't wait on it these days.
I totally agree with you that it makes sense. If you have a bunch of debt or you're worried about losing your job or you've already lost your job, obviously you're not going to run out and buy a house. On the other hand...
I would hope not.
But Georgians are
smart. That's how I read it.
I like that. But on the other hand, the prices are still lower than they have been, and they're going to come back up. Hopefully for the people who own the homes, they're going to come back up. But for the buyers, now's still the time. You know, we're still in that point where you can get a decent deal. So
I think people are walking that thin line. Where you know you can buy it inexpensively, but at the same time, it's a scary time to do it.
Yeah, it is.
So they're all
a little nervous.
Treading water.
Yeah,
but
I think
you're
right.
When you look at that 3.6 interest rate, it's pretty hard to not want to buy a house. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Right. So the incentives are there.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. If you have the means to do so.
Yeah, totally.
Still a very smart investment. Atlanta's traffic woes and the upcoming T-Splost vote, which we've talked a lot about on this station, were the focus of a lengthy article in the New York Times this past weekend. The article noted that Atlanta has been among the fastest growing regions in the country, but the state's road and rail system ranks 49th per capita in transportation spending, adding that only 5% make use of our region's limited train and bus system.
That is sad. That
Very
is just sad.
Sad. Very sad.
I mean, really? 49th? That is amazing. Well, I mean, I think we all kind of knew
that
intuitively.
The education ranking also. So we're consistent.
Well, but in this case, number 50 is Tennessee.
So. Going for the Tennessee jokes. I like it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is unfortunate. I mean, one of the things, I'm from the Northeast originally. We've talked about that before, too. Elizabeth and I both are. But one of the things certainly about being in the Northeast is that public transportation is everywhere, and it's readily accessible, and it feels relatively safe, and it's easy to figure out, and
right.
It gets you most places.
You take it for granted that you can basically go from anywhere in, like, the Philadelphia area to anywhere in the New York area.
Right, without a car.
Right.
Without your
Definitely.
Own car.
Or a,
right.
or a plane or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, growing up in the greater Philadelphia area, I actually lived in a suburb where I could get on, can you believe, the trolley and take it into town and then get on the subway and whatever from there. So I, even as a very small kid, was, and of course it was a different era, we won't say how long ago, but I was able to, you know, as a very young kid, ride the subway by myself because it just was that way. And here it's like that one, you know, two lines, and, you know, if you can't get right where you're going, and if you do ride it too late at night, and then there's only a few people on it,
right.
and it feels a little scary, and
yeah.
You don't really want your kids on there, and it's like a whole thing. So
all the talk about this big vote is heating up, and we are getting down to the wire here, because it's July 31st is the election to vote
now,
yes on the transportation referendum.
Do you guys know, have you guys been keeping up with this?
I have.
You have?
I'm like a walking bundle of statistics on it by now.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, I have a question then for you, because I was saying to somebody the other day, because I heard all the, I'm going to call it propaganda. I heard all the propaganda, and I said, okay, yeah, I'm in. I'm going to vote yes. Yeah, I get it. Right. And then so I said to somebody else, oh, you need to vote. You know, oh, yeah, go vote yes. And then they said, well, you know, like, what does it exactly mean? What is the 1 cent tax? Like, what are the reasons? What's the other side? Why wouldn't I want to vote for it? So can anyone, do you know why people would not want to do it?
Some people don't want any additional taxation.
Okay.
You know, if you think of the Tea Party version, no more government, no more taxation. So
right.
that's part of it.
Okay.
Then another part of it is people saying, well, the projects aren't the right projects.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's pork in the projects. This has probably been the best vetted allocation of funds they've ever had in Georgia. They've gone over the top to ensure that there's been citizen oversight. They've asked the officials to pick the projects. All the money in the region stays in the region. There's a time limit, and if it's raised before the time limit, it's going to stop beforehand.
Okay.
But the real kicker for me would be, if it doesn't happen now, it's not going to happen for a long time.
Right.
And we're already in distress.
Right. Right. And, we're 49th. Right. Hello. Right.
The New York Times is talking about right. it. The news is all the way up right. to New York, just how bad our
it
transportation
yeah.
situation.
And that was Barry, everybody, yeah, by the right. way.
And lurking
that.
In the background is the Port of Savannah. Because when they finish the Port of Savannah,
yeah.
the numbers are we will have 1 million new trucks coming through Atlanta Whoa. Additionally every year.
Oh, my
wow.
God.
Wow.
Time
we
to move,
gotta be
kids.
Ready. Got to be ready.
Yeah.
Either we pass this or the five of us are moving to Canada.
Right.
Just saying.
Right. Or buying a truck.
Well,
that's right.
One more reason to stay here in Atlanta. The Atlanta City Council has approved an ordinance to ban smoking in city's parks. Mayor Kasim Reed is expected to sign the measure into law. The city's ordinance would prohibit smoking in outdoor parks, recreational facilities in the city, including golf and tennis courts, playgrounds, hiking trails, and athletic fields. And if approved, a violation could carry a fine of up to $1,000.
Wow.
Any current or former smokers in the room? No?
Nah,
everybody. No one's going to fess up if they were. Okay, well, I'm going to fess up. I don't smoke, but I did used to smoke back in the day.
On athletic fields?
I thought
and
it was cool.
Trails?
You know? I thought it was cool. So
in the
I was, you know.
On the
no,
playground.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to admit that, but, you know, I had my kid under one arm and the diaper bag and a cigarette dangling out of my mouth. It was just a beautiful thing. But and then I would blow the smoke in her face, of course, because I'm that kind of parent. But no, what I was going to say is, as a former smoker, I have no desire to ever smoke again. I'm far healthier now than I ever was as a smoker. However, I do feel a little sorry for the smokers, just a little, because if you are a smoker, it is hard to quit. And at this point, there's like a one
Society
square foot
is
of space.
Really marginalizing
yeah.
the smoke.
There is like nowhere you can go and smoke.
Well, you have those little boxes at the airport, so maybe we could do like a little box.
Well, you would think
smoke
that
cubes.
A smoke
yeah.
cube.
You would think that would make
That's
more sense at
business.
The park.
The smoke,
the
it
smoke
be,
cube.
It could be a portable smoke
right,
cube.
Right, like those pods, but with clear water.
A
yeah,
smoke
just
food
like
truck.
Airport.
Just drive around.
Oh, my God. I do feel a little bad for the smokers. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night. It's the same problem. You tell them, look, it's deadly. Don't do it. People kept doing it.
Right.
You kept saying, well, it stunts the growth of people around you. People kept doing
right.
it.
Right.
Maybe this is the way.
Just stop giving
Have
them any place
fewer
where you
can. Spaces where you can do it.
And they're less know. And less desirable because, I mean, honestly, I didn't quit because of this, but when they put those little smoking boxes in the airport, oh, like that. If that doesn't show you how disgusting of a habit it is, nothing will. You just see, if you open the door to that thing, the smell that comes out, oh,
right.
like I would never even have walked in there even when I was a smoker. It's that disgusting.
So if you get arrested smoking in a park, do you think they just give you a ticket or they'll like throw
call
you
to
against the wall and haul yeah. you to jail for smoking?
Let's try it, see what happens.
Yeah. No, I think you probably just get a
I think
ticket.
At this point, it's yeah. the $1,000 fine okay. ticket.
Well, what if you like drop the butt
as opposed
and run.
To hard time in the slammer? right. But you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I wonder
where the sentiment goes. Because yeah,
I mean, I definitely get it, and but I, you know, I feel a little bad. That's
but I
I'm
like
saying.
How Kevin's thinking. Always an entrepreneurial
hey,
opportunity.
I was
on
right.
the plate.
Too. We can get some of the butts and find out the DNA,
and then,
maybe we can track down some of the.
Oh,
that could
wow.
be a business.
Oh, there
yeah.
you go.
And then say, hey, you know, I'll split the thousand. I'll split the thousand with you, Mayor Kasim. How
That's
about that?
Oh,
I
maybe
like that.
They could install smoking cams like they do with the intersections, you know, just cameras
oh,
taking
right.
pictures.
Yeah, I like that.
I can wow. see it now. What
a little facial recognition.
Well, I got 2 years on a camel wrap.
There's got to be a business in there somewhere.
Got
I
it.
Bet you.
So speaking of business and entrepreneurship, let's talk about getting access to capital for entrepreneurs. Kevin, why don't you start us off by, you know, introducing more about
okay.
ACE and what you do.
So ACE is, as you mentioned earlier, access to capital for entrepreneurs. We provide loans to small businesses who lack access to traditional forms of credit. ACE has been around for around 10 years, work with a lot of different entrepreneurs of all sizes, primarily smaller entrepreneurs. We receive some SBA funding as well to assist with entrepreneurs to get those loans who have been traditionally denied credit from banks and other financial institutions.
So, Kevin, what's your role with ACE?
So my role right now with ACE is I provide business consulting and what's known as technical assistance. So I go out and work with entrepreneurs after they receive funding from ACE and make sure that they stay in business
okay.
And stay healthy with the end result being making sure that they can repay those loans. That's the number
so,
one.
So, you know, hopefully you won't get to the door of one of those those businesses and have it be closed at, you know, 10 minutes to 9 in the morning.
Unfortunately, it has happened on one or two occasions here recently, and it's a sad thing to see. But, you know, entrepreneurs out there are really trying to move their businesses forward, but they are having some challenges, you know, getting credit, getting access to credit. So that's why we're here today, you know, to talk about how we get access to credit and really keep those entrepreneurs in business.
Well, I mean, it is a risk when you start a new business, and that's obviously why some banks, traditional conservative banks, are going to look at a startup and say, not our game. We don't do that kind of risky loans. But how do you all evaluate or business, or maybe you have a different point of view, to make sure that, you know, the risk has been planned for and compensated for accordingly?
Well, I was just going to add, right now it's all banks. Banks will not fund a beginning business unless
Period.
You happen to have an enormous amount of collateral or something to pay for that'll
A million dollars in the bank, in which case, why are you asking for a loan?
Exactly. So stupid.
But they won't. They want a year to two, usually two, minimum of financials before they'll even look at you.
So right.
Anybody that's looking at a new venture and, you know, not self-capitalized is in a position where they need access to capital, and they're not going to get it from a traditional source.
Definitely.
So how do they find out about ACE? Because, I mean, I have to say, like, I was I started a small business in 2003, a small retail business, and we had a little bit of our own money to get started, but you could always use more money, right? And so we did some looking around. We looked at traditional banks, and of course they wanted to put my house, you know, in exchange for money and all that stuff. But I had never heard of ACE. So how are people finding you?
Yeah, a lot of it is through word of mouth, through conferences, conventions, outreach. We also do events with the SBA. But to your point, one of the issues that some of the alternative lenders have is that just that marketing element. You know, banks have a very robust marketing machine that just constantly pumps out that name.
Right.
Some of your smaller companies lack some of those resources. So we have to really, you know, pretty much, you know, beat the bushes, get out there in the street, shake hands, talk to people. That's how I met some, you know, these two gentlemen here, just making those connections and really connected with entrepreneurs. But I think the message really has to get out to entrepreneurs that, you know, traditional funding, as Barry said, it's over. I mean, it's all but done, you know, but people are still going to banks in very large numbers with a dream in their hand and a business plan and saying, I have this great plan. Can you loan me money? And this bank's like, well, sure, we'll take your application
for $350. We'll take an application, but we'll know you're going to get declined, but we'll take $350 for an application.
Exactly.
And then within 2 hours, we'll tell you a decline and thanks for the $350.
Exactly.
Wow.
Well, let me defend banks briefly. Banks have a very simple business model. It's low risk, low return. If you fit their little sliver, you'll get your loan at your very good rate. If you're slightly riskier, if there's a little hair on your deal, whatever, they won't say, oh, we'll give it to you at 7%. It'll be no.
Right.
That's the model.
Right.
And that's
what
it's been. It's just stricter now than it was.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's a lot of alternative finance going on.
Absolutely.
But this is why I think people think the banks are the bad guys in a way, because first of all, there's that. You know, I remember at the time feeling, even though I sort of knew that going in, that they were going to say no, even though you know that, you figure you should try anyway, because maybe you'll be that one that they'll decide, or I don't know, you'll have a personal relationship with somebody and they'll say okay or whatever. And, you know, I have been at the same bank basically, although it's changed names 10 times. I've been at the same bank since I moved to Atlanta in the late 80s. And I think it started out as like Georgia Federal Credit Union or something. And now it's Wells Fargo. But I think at the time I went into business, it was still Wachovia. But anyway, the point is that, you know, here I have been a good, loyal customer for, I don't know, 17 years or something at that point. They can look at my banking history. They can see that I've always, you know, for credit cards, I've paid the bills. I've always had a balance, all that kind of stuff. They do not care. And then, of course, the minute you do screw something up, here's a $25 fee because you screwed something up. Here's a, you know, 29% interest rate on this credit card because you screwed something up. You just feel like the banks are just out to get you, man.
Yeah, banks also, with ACE and with a few other micro lenders, banks do work with us. So we have some banking partners, and they do provide us some funding to get money out to the entrepreneurs.
Because they trust you.
Right. I guess there's one person on the hook for $1 million as opposed to, you know,
A
bunch of little ones.
Sure.
Right. So I think that in some instances, you do have banks that are trying to get money out there to the entrepreneurs, but it's still a challenge because even with ACE, you know, you still have some deals that even, you know, you still can't do because people are pretty banged up out there.
So, yeah. I remember even feeling a little bit frustrated with the SBA at the time when I was looking into it because everybody's like, oh, you just go to the SBA and you get some money and it's going to be great. And you go over there on their website or you make a call or whatever, and it's just a lot of information but not a lot of actual resources to use.
Well, the SBA doesn't do any loans.
Yeah.
The SBA creates the loan products, and then it is up to whoever is the SBA provider to make the loan. In fact, most of the restrictions on SBA loans don't come from the SBA. They come from the people who are doing the loans.
Okay.
So you'll find out that somebody wants this and this and this, and you'll say, I didn't know that was an SBA rule. They'll say, no, that's our rule.
Right, right.
That's what makes it hard. The SBA's got good programs out there.
Yeah, but it's still a little hard to navigate. Maybe easier now than it was in 2003, but it's good to know that programs like ACE are out there. So when someone comes to you, what do you look for?
You know, we look at all factors. I think, you know, length of time in business is always a plus. You know, we do a lot with collateral, so all of our loans are 100% collateralized. But we take non-traditional forms of collateral, so we'll take more than property or real estate. I mean, we'll look at
firstborn.
Depends on whether it's a boy or girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll look at, you know, restaurant equipment, computers, you know, the monitoring station here. You know, so we're a little bit more flexible on what we will consider as for collateral. And we'll actually sit down and take a little bit more time and look at the loan and look at the likelihood of really trying to get it done. So we put time into the loans.
Gotcha.
How important is, you know, they talk about, what is it, the 5 C's or the 4 C's of making a lending decision, the character of the entrepreneur themselves. So that's another thing that you hear about being one of the most important factors in the overall success of the venture. It's the person running it and their commitment and passion and ability to execute. What have you guys found around the people that you've, you know, been able to find funding for and then their ability to execute successfully?
I saw a great quote the other day. It said, I would rather fund a great manager with a so-so product than a so-so manager with a great product. And I think that's really true. Certainly as you get into equity money, they fund the management. They don't fund the concept
or the idea.
Yeah, we had somebody in recently that was basically saying the same thing. It was one of those startup competition-y sort of people, and they were saying, I forget who it was now, but they were saying the same thing. It's really a lot about the person.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we created a product, Smart Funding Solutions created a product called Consultant Financing, because we saw that in the market, especially with small businesses under $1 million. A lot of the small business owners are more technical and not more entrepreneurial. They know how to bake a cake. They know how to fix a car. But running a business, there's no training or skill set in how to do that.
Yeah.
And so businesses that are over $1 million plus, a lot of bigger businesses, if they have trouble, if they want to know how to grow their business, guess what they do? They go get a consultant. They go get someone that can help them to actually grow their business. Similar to what Kevin does in going and really helping the business owners to really know how to drive their revenues and go to the next level, we actually finance small business consultants. So if you are a small business and you are looking, let's say you're a restaurant owner and you want to go to the next level, well, there are some great restaurant consultants who have helped restaurants grow their business to the next level. Well, if you don't have their consulting fee of $20,000, well, how are you going to pay for that? So we would rather pay for the consultant services than give you funding to make the mistakes you made in the past.
Interesting.
I love that.
No.
And that's why the name is Smart Funding.
Right. Okay. And so so when we created this model, it made a lot of sense to us because our funding, you know, our executive team was just saying, you know what, if we're going to invest money into a small business, why not invest it into the consulting services and help them to grow? And we're happy to say that almost all of the businesses actually grow their business because they're getting expert help.
Yeah.
So we look at all industries. We try to find industry-specific consultants like a restaurant consultant, auto repair consultant, a retail consultant, a beauty shop consultant, and we'll talk to the business owner, hey, we're not going to give you the funding, but if you work with this particular consultant, we'll fund that consultant for you to help you grow your business, and that can take care of their growth.
That is a really – I've never heard of that before. That's a really cool idea. I like that a lot.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, how did you get involved?
Well, we actually was just doing – just direct funding to the business owner.
Okay.
And we actually do a cat. We had a cash flow based product, unlike a credit based financial product or funding product. Our funding was strictly based on the cash flow of the business. So if a business owner had a 600 score, we don't say, "Well, your score is 600." No, we will look at the cash flow and can you afford the monthly payment.
Okay.
If you can afford the monthly payment based on what's coming in with your cash flow, we could take a look at that and see if we can get you the funding. Well, in 2008, we got a call from and this is how our business model changed when the economy went down. We got a call from a consultant firm out in California that says, "Hey, you know, we're a auto repair consulting firm, and now that the economy is slowing down, we can't – a lot of the business owners are not able to pay us our fee. Can you finance the fee?" And then the light bulb came on.
He
and
said,
that's a good idea. We could finance the fee because that
Was – how good's your success rate?
And they've been in business for 26 years helping tens of thousands of auto shops around the country grow their business.
Wow.
We flew to California. We saw their operation. Wow. We said, "Man, you guys are doing an awesome job. How many people know about you?" And they said, "Well, we're having this challenge. We auto repair shop owners can't afford us. But if they can, we can help grow their business." So, and that's where consulting financing got started.
That fascinating.
Very cool.
That's great. We have to talk.
Okay.
Well, Barry, tell us a little bit more about – I mean, obviously, you've sat down with lots of clients who've been in the position of not being a good candidate for traditional financing. How have you helped them tap into some of these other sources of capital?
Well, one of the things that I'm sure we all do is that the reason we have some credibility with the traditional sources is that we are, in some ways, the vetters for them. So
like
we'll
the
look
first
at
layer of defense.
We'll look at them and say, "No, you can't get this. Yes, you can do this. Here are your options. Here's where you can go. Here's where you can get some money, but you will need this." And a lot of people don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
But that's what they need to hear. There are some places where non-traditional financing, I think, is getting better, but in some places where it's getting a lot worse.
Tell more.
Well, the non-traditional world is not as regulated as the traditional world.
Right.
The traditional world, the banks are loosening up a little. We've actually been able to get a credit line for a client recently, and for a long time you couldn't get any unsecured financing. So things are getting a little better, but it's still very, very – they want most things to be right. And I started out doing mostly business acquisition and refinance. And then the world collapsed. The banks got tighter and tighter. And then the whole group of financiers behind the banks disappeared. There used to be an entire mezzanine financing market that would do the deals the banks wouldn't do – little more money, a little riskier, maybe no personal guarantees. All of them disappeared about 4 years ago. And because of that, there's nobody in the market between the banks and very expensive money.
So a whole layer of the financing structure
disappeared.
In the business community basically is now kind of being reinvented with...
Right. I maintain that if somebody hung out a shingle and said that they would lend money at 9 to 12% for businesses that, again, have to qualify, they'd have a line around the block.
Around the block.
And
you would have good businesses. I think that the one thing that's really interesting about this particular time in the market is that now, in the past, you know, most of the people in the market looking for alternative financing were people who had maybe some very serious credit challenges, some operational challenges. But now you have people who may have been in business for 2 or 3 years, you know, millions of dollars in revenue, but the bank can't make the deal work, you know. So everybody is in the same boat right now. So it's a very interesting situation.
So what do you see on the horizon? Obviously the situation kind of continues to evolve. Do you see banks loosening up as we move forward, or more and more of these alternate sources becoming a very critical element? Because obviously we've got to get small companies to grow. That's where job growth is going to come, right? How do we do that?
I think you'll see the banks loosening up. Banks tend to be copycats, to use a third grade term. the banks tend to do what the other banks are doing. In fact, that's how we got into this mess. That's how we got into this, because somebody said they're doing loans across the street. They're doing 100%, and they're doing them by the millions. We should get involved in that. Well, everybody stopped, and everybody else stopped. Now some of the banks that do not have as much baggage and don't have as much bad debt are starting to make the kinds of loans banks would make, although they're not, you know, swinging for the fences yet. But the small banks will lead that, community banks, and the bigger banks will eventually follow. Right now, they're still getting breathed down on by regulators.
Yeah.
That's what's hurting.
Yeah. I was going to say that, too. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of more banks than you think are under some sort of order from the feds in terms of their ability to lend, but they still have to market as if they're making loans. You know, they have to keep that. They have to keep that image. They have to keep
that's
up that perspective.
Their business. That's their business. But if they haven't deleveraged as much as the Fed wants them to,
there's no loans. Exactly. Exactly.
It's just a window dressing. Well, so that's the financing situation. What I also like about talking to people in you all's position is you're really at the grassroots of entrepreneurial activity. So, what's your sense about what's going on in terms of business owners? Are they growing their business? If they can get access to these kind of capital, is there opportunity out there in the market for people to continue to launch entrepreneurial ventures?
I think, you know, I talk with a lot of entrepreneurs every day, and I think what I've seen is maybe a mini explosion of just entrepreneurial growth. I think a lot of people have lost a certain amount of confidence in the system, so to speak. You know, you've seen the banks fail. You've seen the mortgage crisis. You see, you know, companies folding. So I think a lot of people have said, well, you know, if I don't do something for myself, if I don't have some personal security, you know, it's a wrap. So I think people have gotten very creative in terms of how they're going to get their funding, how they're going to start their businesses, what they're going to start. I think just the emergence of technology has really allowed for a lot of different types of businesses that don't really require a lot of startup capital. So you mentioned a digital company earlier that received some funding from the Mavericks owner. I mean, there are a ton of small entrepreneurs out there that have everything from one young lady has a virtual store where you can go and shop at all of the smaller independent retailers online. And I mean, so but none of those things require a lot of capital in terms of equipment, machinery, space, you know, things of that nature. So I think you've seen a lot of those types of businesses kind of explode on the business field.
Well, for me, talking to a lot of business owners, and this might sound a little funny, but the banking situation actually helped the situation in a little bit. I'm going to tell you why. A lot of the business owners who were getting capital very easily did not strategically run their business in a way that will help them grow. So if I was able to get capital easily and someone walks in my door and say, hey, spend $50,000 on a sign, you'll grow your business, but without really strategically sitting down and really growing your business, and then because capital was so easily, they made a lot of mistakes, and so the market shook those people out, and the business owners who actually strategically grew their business and was very smart, they actually were still in business. So those businesses who could not get capital to keep the business running, not in a way to grow it strategically, but just was using the money improperly. Well, those businesses now are starting to say, hey, I need to learn how to grow my business. And so I think that's a good thing that came out of the whole banking, you know, meltdown.
Right.
Because now we're seeing businesses are going to professionals and saying, hey, you know, we need help. I need help, I'm going to put away my pride, which a lot of small business owners have.
Exactly.
A lot of pride.
And not invest $50,000 in a huge sign, which is kind of like a pride ego thing. But hey, I'm going to turn to an expert who probably knows more than me and put my money in something that's really an ROI.
I'm going to give you one quick example. We work with a lot of healthcare professionals. We work with dentists, you know, chiropractors, and those healthcare professionals. Well, there are a lot of consultant organizations that can help them to grow their business. Well, you know, a doctor consultant will probably charge about $20,000 to probably $50,000 to go in and help a doctor grow their business. Well, the doctor will call me and say, well, why do I need this loan? Why do I need this consulting firm to help me to grow my business? And I say, How much did you spend on your education to become a medical doctor?
Right.
Hundreds of thousands. How much did you spend on entrepreneur education? Zero.
Right.
It's time to spend your money on some entrepreneur education so you can have multiple offices. Is that your goal? Yes. Okay. If you don't have that knowledge, someone does, and someone has the experience in helping other doctors do that. And obviously they'll go move on.
You know, right. I think that's a good point. And you, Kevin, you mentioned something about this too in a roundabout way, in that, you know, with the way the economy has changed, there are so many people, I think, right now who do not trust the system. I'm doing the air quotes on the radio. But, you know, but I think, you know, there's a lot of people coming right out of college who are looking at the environment, you know, the economic environment, and they're saying, I can't get a job. I'm back living on my mom's couch. And, you know, I'm going to start my own business. Or there's people kind of closer to my age, which we're not going to say what that is, who, you know, got
it's
laid
radio.
Off.
It's the radio.
That's
nobody
right. Nobody knows.
You sound 27.
Done and done. But yeah, you know, who are a little bit older, let's say, and who've gotten laid off and who are also looking out into the, you know, economic climate and saying, no one's going to hire me. I'm too old. I'll start my own business. So there are a lot of people out there with a lot of really good learning, perhaps from their college education or from their years in business, but perhaps not entrepreneurial education. So they have a lot of good skills and a lot of good knowledge, and they have the desire because they feel like they don't have any other choice. But now they need that information on how to, you know, maybe they were a marketing professional, let's say. Now they need to know how to do their books as well. Or, you know, whatever. So
right. Well, I mean, all business is basically, you know, how do I take money and turn it into more money?
Correct.
So, I mean, through some other, through an operation, a skill set, a trade, a scheme, whatever it is, but it's some way of, you know, you start off with a certain amount of money and at the end of the day, you have more because you did something right.
That's
the part that people don't know. They know the trade.
Right.
Right. They know how to cut hair or how to operate a machine or how to invent something, but not necessarily the business aspect. And that's where they really need to turn to advisors and consultants.
The one thing you learn is that nobody is great at everything.
Right.
Yeah.
People
well,
are really
me.
Good at some things.
I'm amazing.
Right. And,
and very
I can't
young,
tell
too.
That. It's radio. When you find a consultant, the consultant's real value, and all of us are consultants, is that you're not so close to the business. You're not on top of it. You're not dealing with the day-to-day.
Right.
You can look back at it, down on it from point C and say, why aren't you doing this?
Yeah.
This is something that other companies like yours have done. Have you tried that?
Yeah.
And it's very valuable for anybody just to be able to see his business the way somebody else with knowledge would see it.
Right. So, Barry, and all of you guys, I guess, really, there is a lot of information and sort of resources, it sounds like, for people who have been in business for a year or two. Mm-hmm. But what advice would you give to people who really are now just, they have their idea and they just got out of school or they just got laid off or they just decided, hey, I want to start my own business. Where do they start?
Look for another job.
Well, there are all kinds of places to start. First of all the universities have SBDCs, Small Business Development Groups, that will give you up to 10 hours free information.
Okay.
And they'll work on you on the financial side. They'll work for you on the marketing side. And this is a free service. There's also a major effort with the Metro Chamber to try to coordinate early stage companies all the way through the system. Combined, I think, with this statewide money that has just come available through the jobs bill, I guess.
Yeah.
That has helped. That is going to eventually help people a lot. It's a hard problem because there are a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And you need somebody like the Metro Atlanta Chamber to coordinate it because they're the only ones probably with the credibility all the way through the system.
Interesting.
But Atlanta is the most entrepreneurial city in the country, number one.
Yes.
Where we really lack and don't do a terrible job is on the funding side.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'd agree with Barry wholeheartedly. One of the things that I've found in my experience is that experience is the key to entrepreneurship. I mean, there you can learn a trade, you can learn about a business, you can learn all of the statistics, but until you actually are in that industry, see some of the nuances, you know, it's pretty an uphill battle. So I think one of the things that I advise, particularly younger entrepreneurs, is that while you're young, while you don't have a lot of obligations, family, kids, things of that nature, you know, get a job of some type in the industry that you want to go in. I mean, even if you work for free, you're not really working for free. You know, you're getting experience in a particular industry, and you're understanding, you know, if you want to open a bakery, go work at a bakery and see what a baker does, see how they handle their business, see how they wake up, see when they go to bed, see what the customers are like, see what the traffic, see how hot it is in the kitchen. I mean, yeah. You may not want to be a baker.
Right.
But I think what happens inevitably with a lot of entrepreneurs is they have this grandiose dream. They watch a good TV show and they want to be a chef or they want to be a baker or they want, and they get in there and they see that it's a 16-hour day. It's hot as Hades. You know.
You're on your feet.
You're up at three in the morning.
You're on your feet all day. People complaining. They hate, no matter how good you thought your cakes were, people hate your cakes. So, but once you're in it as an entrepreneur, once you're in that business, particularly if you've gotten funding, mm-hmm. once you're in it, you're in it.
You're in it.
Right. You're in it.
Mm-hmm.
For, until the loan is mature. So you're looking at 3 to 5 years. So even if you get out of it, you're still in it every month.
Right. And another thing too, Kevin, you got to, you know, what I tell entrepreneurs, you got to come to the table with something. If you are just starting out and you are looking for someone to invest in you and your idea, well, how much did you invest? Because that's what they're going to look at. You want me to give you $50,000 and you put in $10?
Right.
Because you made you wrote something on a piece. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And so business owners, you know, they can go to the SBDC. They're going to tell them the same thing. You know, they're going to give them all the education, everything to start. But you have to come back to the table. That's why I mentioned getting another job, because you're going to need money. It takes money to make money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a classic story. I have a friend, and he has a conference that he does regularly. And I think the cost is something like $200, and you meet with all these different business executives and you find out what's going on, how to run your business. Inevitably, he has dozens of people that say, well, you know, I really want to grow my business, but I can't really afford to go to the conference. So, you know, I can't afford to go to the conference to find out how I could get $50,000. Well, it only costs $200. If you don't even have $200, you're nowhere in the league to do a $50,000 loan. So it's really amazing sometimes.
Right. Well, once you force people to put their own skin in the game, mm-hmm. and
it's a different story.
And the commitment level does get tested at that point. And, you know, as an investor, you want to make sure that they are totally in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure we get your contact information, all of you guys out there. So let's start with Kevin. If people are looking to connect with Ace, how do they do that?
So they could go to the website at aceloans.org, or they can shoot me an email directly at McGee, that's McGee@aceloans.org, and we'd be happy to talk with you.
And Smart Funding?
Smart Funding Solutions. They can email the office at sales@smartfundingsolutions.com, or they can call 888-584-5333 and speak to someone at the office. Yes.
Excellent. And Barry?
Well, my email is barry@etraadvisory.com, and the phone number is 770-722-9787. I would send people to my website, but there's entirely too much information there.
Okay. That's interesting. Guess you need to have that worked on, huh, Barry? Need an entrepreneur to help you with that?
Right.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks so much, guys. This was an excellent panel discussion today. Before we wrap up, I believe Dana has our in-town update. What's going on this week, Dana?
All right. Well, let's see. For starters, there are, as we know, Elizabeth, a couple of new things to look at here in downtown. First of all, we have the newly cleaned up and rededicated fountains at Margaret Mitchell Square that we saw yesterday as they were unveiled. Also, a brand new ATL-shaped playground over at Woodruff Park.
It's so cool.
It's very cute. And so we're hoping that means Budweiser cannot
trademark
the ATL. What's up with that?
Yes, but definitely another reason to take a swing by Woodruff Park, because it is a super cool new Atlanta landmark there.
And also, if you don't come downtown with your kids very often, now, you know, right across from Woodruff Park, there's a lot of places to eat. And now you can hang out in the park and your kids can play while you're having a little picnic lunch or whatever. It's pretty cool. Okay. Also, don't forget about Downtown Restaurant Week, which starts July 21st and runs through July 29th. This is, of course, a great opportunity to check out some of the awesome restaurants downtown for a pretty reasonable price. The way it works is the participating restaurants are each offering a 3-course meal for either $25 or $35 per person. And you don't need to go online and do anything. You don't need coupons. You just show up.
Right. It starts at 4 o'clock. get there for an early dinner.
Yeah. And if you want to know which restaurants are participating and you want to see what's all the details of that, you can just check that out also at AtlantaDowntown.com. So other things going on around town this week include Food Truck Wednesdays. That's today at Underground Atlanta from 11 to 2. Tomorrow, there's the Green Market at Peachtree Center. There's the 200 Office Corporate Wind Down here at 200 Peachtree Street starting at 6:30. And then there's also the W Atlanta Downtown's Drink Shop Live at 6 p.m. Not sure what that is, but it's got drinking in it,
great.
So I'm okay with it. On Friday, there's a poolside party at Wet Bar at 8 o'clock and Equilibrium at also at 8 o'clock. Not sure what that is either, but you can Google all this stuff, people. And then also Saturday, Elizabeth and I will be venturing a little farther out of downtown, going to celebrate the Beatles with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra up at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater at Encore Park. And we encourage you to check that out and get some tickets and see if you can figure out who we are, because we'll be there.
That's
wandering around.
An awesome show.
We'll be causing trouble, I'm sure, the two of us. And again, if there are still tickets available to that show, you can get them on Ticketmaster, and you can get more details on that at atlantasymphony.org. So I think that about wraps it up for this morning. Do you think, Elizabeth? Is there anything else we need to?
That covers everything.
All right.
We are good to go.
I think we want to thank Kevin, Barry, and Rob for joining us.
Thank you all as well. I had a typo.
Sorry, guys. And as always, for Good Morning Atlanta, I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to BusinessRadioX.com, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. And be sure to stay tuned for Southern Hospitality coming up next here on Business Radio X.